जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी विश्वर नंदना ब्रज जन रंगना विश्वर नंदना ब्रज जन रंगना यामुन तीरावनचारी यामुन भागवतम की जय गीता गौ प्रेमानंदे हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय All grace to the assembled devotees, all grace to the assembled devotees, all grace to the assembled devotees, all grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, The Son of Drona Punished. Today's text 29 through 33. 29 word meaning, Suta Goswami, Uvacha said, Sutva, after hearing, Bhagavata, by the personality of Godhead, Proktam, what was said, Palguna, another name of Sri Arjuna, Paraviraha, the killer of the opposing warrior, Sprishtva, after touching Apaha, water, Tam, him, Parikramya, circumambulating, Brahman, the Supreme Lord, Brahma Astram, the Supreme Weapon, Sandadhe, acted on. Suta uvacha,
Shrutva
Bhagavata proktam,
Haguna
paravira, Sprishtva pastam parikramya, Brahmam Brahmastram Sandadhe Suto Vacha Shrutva Bhagavata Proktam Phalguna Parabira Sprishtva Pastam Parikramya Brahmam Brahmastram Sandadhe Suto Vacha Shrutva Bhagavata Proktam Phalguna Parabira Sprishtva Pastam Parikramya Brahmam Brahmastram Sandadhe
Is Brahmastram here? What does it say in the word for word there? What does it say for the Brahmaya to counteract the Brahmastra? Huh. Okay. Well, I don't know which version this is we have.
Shrutva Bhagavata Proktam
Phalguna
Parabiraha
Srishtva
Pastam Parikramya
Brahmam
Brahmaya Sandare
Suta
Vacha
Shrutva
Translation, Sri Suta Goswami said, hearing this from the personality of Godhead, Arjuna touched water for purification, and after circumambulating Lord Sri Krishna, he cast his Brahmastra weapon to counteract the other one. So I'll just read through all of these.
Sanghatyan yonyam ubhayos Tejasi sarasangrite avritya rodasi khamcha pravridhatirka vandat.
When the rays of the two Brahmastras combined, a great circle of fire, like the disk of the sun, covered all outer planet, outer space and the whole firmament of planets. See the Prabhupada's purport. The heat created by the flash of the Brahmastra resembles the fire exhibited in the sun globe at the time of cosmic annihilation. The radiation of atomic energy is very insignificant in comparison to the heat produced by a Brahmastra. The atomic bomb explosion can, at utmost, blow up one globe, but the heat produced by the Brahmastra can destroy the whole cosmic situation. The comparison is therefore made to the heat at the time of annihilation. Text 31. Drishvastra tejas tutayos tilokam pradahan mahat dayamana praja sarva samvartakam amansuta. All the population of the three worlds was scorched by the combined heat of the weapons. Everyone was reminded of the Samvartika fire, which takes place at the time of annihilation. Report. The three worlds are the upper, lower, and intermediate planets of the universe. Although the Brahmastra was released on this earth, the heat produced by the combination of both weapons covered all the universe. And all the populations on all the different planets began to feel the heat excessively and compared it to that of the Samvartika fire. No planet, therefore, is without living beings, as less intelligent materialistic men think. 32. Prajopadravam alaksha lokavyati karam chatam Matamcha Vasudevasya Sanjaha Arjuna Gravan. Thus, seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons, as Lord Sri Krishna desired. Purport. The theory that the modern atomic bomb explosions can annihilate the world is childish imagination. First of all, the atomic energy is not powerful enough to destroy the world. And secondly, ultimately it all rests on the supreme will of the Supreme Lord. Because without his will or sanction, nothing can be built up or destroyed. It is foolish also to think that natural laws are ultimately powerful. Material nature's law works under the direction of the Lord, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord says there that natural laws work under His supervision. The world can be destroyed only by the will of the Lord, and not by the whims of tiny politicians. Lord Sri Krishna desired that the weapons released by both Drauni and Arjuna be withdrawn. And it was carried out by Arjuna at once. Similarly, there are many agents of the all-powerful Lord, and by his will only can one execute what he desires. And the last verse, text 33. Tata asa jatarasa darunam gautami sutam bandha marsha tamasha. Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gautami and bound him with ropes like an animal. Purport. Ashwatthama's mother, Kripi, was born in the family of Gautama. The significant point in this shloka is that Ashwatthama was caught and bound up with ropes like an animal. According to Sridhar Swami, Arjuna was obliged to catch this son of a Brahmana like an animal as part of his duty, dharma. This suggestion by Sridhar Swami is also confirmed in the later statement of Sri Krishna. Ashwatthama was a bona fide son of Dronacharya and Kripi, but because he had degraded himself to a lower status of life, it was proper to treat him as an animal and not as a Brahmana. Om Jnana Timinandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Arjuna is addressed here as Palguna, or Palguni. He was born on Palgun, that's why his name is Palguna. In fact, Krishna was born on Janmashtami, of course. And Arjuna was born the following Gaur Purnima. Right? So he's that much younger than Krishna, a little bit younger than Krishna. So Phalgun. So what did Krishna say? It says here Arjuna was responding to what Krishna said. A couple of things, but just the last of yesterday's verses. Only another Brahmastra can counteract this weapon. Since you are expert in military science, subdue this weapon's glare with the power of your own weapon. Ashwatthama, he's a good example of having a lot of power but not too many brains. That's always dangerous. There's an example, I remember seeing this example many years ago in it. Harikesh Prabhu, he wrote his book on Varnashram. And part of that book, he gave this example. He says, it's just like someone lives in the desert, is a camel driver, and one day he strikes oil, so he becomes really, really rich. So he's used to driving his camel in a certain way. So he gets his big, fancy car, and he doesn't really know how to make the car run. But when he wants it to go, he kicks it really hard. In other words, he floors it. Goes flying through the marketplace with it. So his wealth increased, but his knowledge didn't increase. That's the idea. Ashwatthama. Actually, his name, Ashwa, means horse. When he was born, he brayed like a horse. So that's how he got the name. So he was really quite a nonsense, actually. We see what he's trying to do here. He said he already killed the five sons of the Pandavas. These five sons, by the way, I looked in the ninth canto, there's in the genealogy, in the final chapters of the ninth canto, it's described, their names are all given there, which son belongs to which father. Yudhisthira's son was Prativindya, Bhima's son was Shrutasena, Arjuna's son was Shrutakirti, Nakula's son was Shatanika, and Sahadeva's son was Shrutakarma. So they were all killed. Now I know there's some story about how they were just little kids, but that doesn't seem to be right. Isn't there some story that Dronacharya or Duryodhana felt their heads and then he said, oh, these are just little boys or something? And I remember hearing some story like that. Anyway, but they fought in the Battle of Kurukshetra and they're called Maharathas. Sobhadra Draupadeyascha Sarva Eva Maharata. So there's a whole list of soldiers who are fighting. This is verse 6 of the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So they're included in the list of Maharathas. Sobhadra means Abhimanyu, the son of Subhadra, and Draupadeyas means the sons of Draupadi. That means these five that I just mentioned. So they're all considered Maharathas. Sarva Eva Maharata. So I don't think they were little boys. They were grown men, or at least older. Of course, Abhimanyu was only 16, I think, so maybe they were only as old as him. I don't know for sure. So these, actually, the Pandavas, they all had other sons as well. This came to mind because I was thinking, you know, what happens later, in the beginning of the next chapter, Ashwatthama doesn't give up. You know, he's punished. But then what happens, Krishna's about, is ready to leave Hastinapur and go back to Dwarka. And this is just where, next chapter is Kunti offering her prayers. So of course she's offering her prayers when Krishna's about to leave. But as they're gathered there, then Uttara runs up and says, please save my child. Some horrible fiery weapon is coming. And it's okay if it kills me, but please protect the child in my womb. So it's often stated that Parikshit is the only remaining descendant of the Pandavas, so that he's the one who's going to rule next. He's actually a grandchild of these. But they had the Pandavas, they had other wives and they had other children from these wives. And what happened to all those other children, I'm not sure. Some of them, I know that some of them were actually killed at Kurukshetra, but one I know wasn't, so I'll mention that. But anyway, this is the list here. This is from the ninth canto again. Yudhisthira and his brothers begot other sons and other wives. Yudhisthira begot a son named Devaka through the womb of Paudavi. I don't know who that is. And Bhimasena begot a son named Ghatotkacha through his wife Hidimba. So I think a lot of us know about that. After they escaped from the house of Lak, that's when Arjuna married Hidimba and had a son, Ghatotkacha, who also fought in the Battle of Kurukshetra. And he was killed by Karna with Karna's Shakti weapon. He actually, Ghatotkacha, he was always favorable to the Pandavas. And he helped them a lot in the battle because Karna had this really special weapon and he had to waste it, you might say. He had to get rid of it to kill Ghatotkacha because he was causing such havoc. So that was, let's see. And yeah, so Bhimasena had another son. He had a son named Sarvaga or Sarvagata through his wife Kali. She's also called Balandara. What happened to him, I don't know. I couldn't. Some of these, I have a Puranic encyclopedia at home. So it's an encyclopedia from the Puranas. I picked it up in India one year. And it has, you know, all information on so many different characters. And it's extracted from the Puranas mostly and the Mahabharata. But I couldn't find anything on some of these personalities, some of these characters in this great drama. Sahadev had a son named Suhotra through his wife named Vijaya, who was the daughter of the king of the mountains. Nakula begot a son named Naramitra through his wife named Karenumati. Similarly, Arjuna begot a son named Iravan through his wife known as Ulupi, the daughter of the Nagas, and a son named Babruvahana by the womb of the princess of Manipur. Her name was Chitrangada. Babruvahana became the adopted son of the king of Manipur. So Arjuna, the story with Arjuna is that, you know, the arrangement was made. This was suggested by Narada Muni, that because Draupadi had five husbands, in order just to stop any possibility of there being some conflict between them, Narada Muni suggested that each husband spend 1 year at a time with Draupadi. And the rule was that none of the other brothers could come there while the two were together. But there was an emergency and Arjuna needed to get some weapons and they were in the house, so he went there and he suffered the consequences. He had to go on pilgrimage for a year. That was the punishment, you can say, given by Narada Muni. So he went on pilgrimage and he was traveling around. And first he met this Ulupi, who was the daughter of the Nagas. Now you always wonder, what does that mean? Just like Jambavan's daughter, Jambavati, what does it mean exactly? He's king of the bears, what does she look like? I don't know. So this Ulupi, I don't know, some of you may know, you know, there are people who believe that our leaders are reptiles. You know, you heard this before? Our leaders are, you know, somehow they belong to some reptilian race and they're able to shapeshift and look like, you know, President Trump or whatever, you know, whoever. And by one of the sources they cite is the Vedas, because they talk about the Nagas. You know? So anyway, so Arjuna consorted with this Ulupi and had a son named Iravan. And then he went to Manipur and he had a son through Chitrangada, the princess of Manipur. And that was Babruvahana. So then Arjuna, he continued on pilgrimage and he said, well, I'll come back at some other time. Then the whole war went on, the battle went on, and they won the battle. And after the battle, Yudhishthira performed Ashwamedha yagyas. And part of that yagya apparently is to take a horse. I know they had the challenge horse, that comes earlier. But Arjuna was traveling around with a horse, and when he got to Manipur, his mother told him to steal the horse. So that initiated a battle, and there was a big battle that took place, a big fight between Arjuna and Babruvahana. And Arjuna was actually killed. So of course, which one knew about it? I get to anyway, because there are two wives, Ulupi and Chitrangada. Let me backtrace a little bit here. So what happened? Why did Arjuna get killed? Arjuna got killed because during the battle of Kurukshetra, there was only one way to kill Dronacharya, and that was if he was somehow distracted. Right? So what did Arjuna do? He placed Shikhandi in front of him. Shikhandi was Amba in his last life. And Shikhandi, of course, was a woman. So Drona, was it? Yeah, Dronacharya, he knew about this. Right? So he knew that this Shikhandi had been a woman, so he wouldn't fight with him. So he wouldn't shoot his weapon, so Arjuna was... What? Oh, Bhishma, I'm sorry. Not Drona, Bhishma, that's another story. Bhishma. Bhishma, of course, Bhishma was the one who kidnapped Amba. So Bhishma wouldn't fight, so Arjuna was able to kill Bhishma because of Chitrangada. So Ganga Devi, the mother of Bhishma, she was displeased by this. She was angry at Arjuna, and she cursed Arjuna that he would be killed by his own son, because Bhishma Devi was killed by Arjuna, which is like a son, his grandson. So that's how Arjuna was able to be killed by Bhruvahana. But one of the wives, I forget which one did which, but one of the wives said, please, Chitrangada, she went to she asked Ganga, please, can you, you know, withdraw this curse? And she said, well, no, he'll die, but he'll be able to be brought back to life with this stone called Mrityusanjeevani stone, a special gem. And so that's what happened after Arjuna was killed. Then one of the other wife, Ulupi, I guess, was lamenting, and then the stone was brought, and then it was put on Arjuna's chest, and he was brought back to life. So then they all went to Hastinapur, and Bhruvahana, he was still alive after the battle of Kurukshetra, and he was living there in Hastinapur. And in fact, he was there when Krishna left to go back to Dwarka. So one wonders, why wasn't he an heir to the throne? I don't know what the story is, why he wasn't made the king, because even you would say, well, Yudhishthira was the oldest son, so his son would naturally be the first in line. But, of course, all their sons were killed, at least the five sons of Draupadi. But then who became the heir to the throne? Not a descendant of Yudhishthira, but a descendant of Arjuna. So you wonder, well, why did they skip? Why did Bhruvahana not become the king? Why did it jump to Parikshit Maharaj? Anyway, that's a little background about them. So let's see here. So we talk about the two brahmastras combining. Prabhupada says two things here. In one purport, he says that you can maybe blow up the globe, but then he says, well, that's foolishness to think you can blow up the globe. And then he also says it can destroy the whole cosmic situation. So, of course, the whole cosmic situation means all of the universes together. So at most, you could blow up, theoretically, you might say, one universe, but not all the universes together. And the whole, of course, this Brahmastra, what does Brahma mean here? Of course, Brahma can mean different things. Brahma can mean just spirit, so it's a spiritual weapon. But Brahma also means the hymns of the Vedas, which Prabhupada, he mentions it, I think. He threw the hymns of the Vedas, I think Prabhupada calls it, and that's what Prabhupada uses as a translation. So the idea is that you produce this weapon by some incantation. You chant the mantra, and that's how you're able to produce it. So you're able to manipulate through Vedic hymns. That's one reason why it's called Brahmastra. Astra, of course, means a weapon. So a weapon that's invoked through Vedic hymns. Now, I thought it was interesting that we find this in different places where it says that Arjuna touched water. And I was wondering, what's with that exactly? What's that all about? Why did he have to touch water? It seems so insignificant. He's going to create a weapon that can practically blow up the universe, but he has to touch water first? Well, somehow that's part of the process of invoking the mantra. You do this, this auspicious thing to invoke the mantra. There are kinds of auspicious things. That's another thing I wonder about. Why are they auspicious? It just seems like eternally, well, they must be eternally. It's just part of material nature, the way Krishna created this world, that certain things are auspicious. Now, I went through the Bhagavatam and I came up with a list of some of the things that are mentioned in different places that are considered auspicious. We know one, for example, well, anything that having to do with a cow, of course, is auspicious. And it's and the switch of the cow, the hair on the tail of the cow, you know, like when something happens to Krishna, then they move that switch of the cow around. I always wonder if it's from if it's just the hair or if it's actually the cow standing there and moving the tail around. I'm not sure. Or more, is it more like a chamara, maybe it's just the hair. Anyway, the switch of the cow, that's considered auspicious. And then here, these are just some other things that are eternally auspicious. But Krishna, when he was in Dwarka, when he would get up in the morning, his morning program, part of his morning program was to look at auspicious things. So he would look at ghee, a mirror, I guess most of us do that to put tilak on, the cows and bulls, the brahmanas and the demigods. I guess that means a murti. And then some other things that are mentioned in different places. Turmeric, sandalwood pulp, yogurt and unbroken grains, full water pots, fruits, ushinara root, pure nectarian water, fragrant clay, tulsi leaves, kusha grass, and lotus flowers. And then in the installation of the deity, it says these different auspicious items are shown to the Lord. Gold, silver, copper, stone, rice, ghee, yogurt, flowers, the swastika, water from the Ganges, and earth from a holy place. One thing you notice about these is that they're all natural. In that sense, you could say that they're pure. I know when I was traveling with a devotee in India, brought up in a Brahmin family, when we were, sometimes it was really dry, we were in dry places in North India, and if we, for example, had to urinate when we were traveling, and there was no water around, he said, just take dirt. You can use dirt in replacement of water, because it's also pure, because it's, you know, fundamental, one of the fundamental panchabhutas. So then here's a little something, this is from, is this the first one? Yeah, this is from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. In reference to the gopis. This is when Krishna is leaving for Dwarka, for Mathura from Vrindavan. Though the young gopis were pained at heart at the thought of soon being separated from Krishna, Mother Yashoda had them sing transcendental songs for his good fortune and ceremoniously carry full pots and other auspicious items. This is another idea. When someone is leaving to go someplace, you want the atmosphere to be very auspicious. It's mentioned one of the upcoming chapters. Krishna leaves, of course, he leaves Hastinapur to go to Dwarka, and then he, of course, enters into Dwarka. There are two chapters like that, really nice chapters. Both of them have very nice prayers. So it's said there when Krishna was leaving Hastinapur, or maybe it was later, another time, when Krishna was leaving Dwarka, I forget which one. Anyway, it's said there that the ladies were trying to control their tears because they were feeling sad that Krishna was leaving, but they were crying, but the verse actually says they didn't want to cry because that was considered inauspicious. So here it says that the gopis, Mother Yashoda wanted them to do something auspicious because Krishna is leaving, go to Mathura. So they were supposed to sing transcendental songs.